BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
It's the 24th of December, Christmas Eve in Norway.
Christmas is really important in Norway because when we're fortunate, we have a lot of snow and it's the winter wonderland.
Olaf Risan has just been woken up by his two young children.
You want to get the Christmas feeling.
And for Olaf, that means making sure the whole family is settled down in front of the TV by 11 a.m. and tuned to NRK, the Norwegian national broadcaster, for a special movie.
They got these new pajamas, they got their candy, and they took their blankets and really settled down in the sofa.
Olaf sips his coffee and looks outside. It's half a meter of snow. It's a white Christmas. A dream come true, perhaps. But then, nothing happens when Olaf clicks the TV remote control.
No signal means no TV. My two kids, they started crying. And I'm like, what can I do?
Olaf gets on the phone, he calls the distributor, and he explains the problem.
This movie has got to be on the TV. This means something to me. It's just the sound. It's the voice.
And this film isn't just meaningful for Olaf and his family. All across Norway, households tune in to the film's live broadcast on TV every Christmas Eve. In Germany, in the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Switzerland, families across Europe are doing the same thing too. They're all partaking in a continent-wide Christmas ritual to watch the exact same film. I'm Matthew Side and welcome to Sideways, my show about the ideas that shape our lives with stories of seeing the world differently. In this episode, I explore how a Czechoslovakian foot slid into a Norwegian slipper, the story of a Cinderella tale from the 1970s, and how it's found a special place in the Christmas celebrations of millions of Europeans. On a summer's day in 1974, actor Knut Risan is in the head offices of NRK for a voiceover job. He's a master of the art.
He was one of the first in Norway to do audiobooks. He was one of our most used actors for radio commercials, TV commercials.
And Olaf should know, he's Knut's son.
His voice was heaven sent. He had that low baritone bass way down in the cellar. Fantastic voice.
At the NRK office, Knut is approached by a producer who's also well aware of his talent. It's another job opportunity. They've just acquired the distribution rights to a new Cinderella film on the cheap. They want Knut to try dubbing it into the national language from its original.
Somebody had faith in it and thought, this is a good idea. Let's try it on.
It's called Three Nuts for Cinderella. At least that's the English translation. I won't attempt the Norwegian. Olaf can do that for you.
Tre nøtter til Askepott.
Knut's never heard of the film, but he decides to give it a go.
If I close my eyes, I can see him in this little booth with the red light and the microphone.
Knut doesn't have time to rehearse, but he really is a natural. He improvises the dialogue lines as he sees the characters appear on his screen.
Doing the queen? Okay, how do I want for? And then somebody laughed, said, could you do the girl's voice?
And the prince.
Oi, oi, hun vil slåss.
And the king.
Du skulle skamme deg, oppføre deg som en guttunge.
Knut plays more and more characters, and he does his best to make each one feel distinct. As the film plays out in front of Knut, he voices up the familiar story of Cinderella, who's tormented by her stepmother. In the voice of the stepmother, in Norwegian, Knut calls on Cinderella.
Gi meg knappen, Askepott!
Askepott! Askepott!
Askepott, sølvtråden! Askepott!
And he made everybody laugh.
The film has come to life in Norwegian with one man's voice playing every single character.
Okay, one actor, one salary. Great.
Months later, Knut gets a phone call. NRK wants to broadcast the film around Christmas time.
And my father was flabbergasted.
No, we were just messing around.
With Knut doing all the voices, the film, it's goofy, it's quite funny, and a bit eccentric. It's a slightly odd choice by the Norwegian broadcaster. There are no mentions of Christmas at all in the film, and this particular Cinderella story is lacking in that familiar sugary gloss of Disney's story that emerged from post-war America, the one that I think perhaps most people think of when they think about Cinderella. The version Knut has been asked to dub into Norwegian is a 1973 film from communist Czechoslovakia, directed by Václav Florniček. In this version, there's no fairy godmother, no pumpkin chariot. Instead, the magic that gets Cinderella to the prince comes from three hazelnuts, which are given to her as a gift from her friend and one of her stepmother's servants. Three times she drops the nut to the ground, and each time it contains an outfit that gets her into the prince's company. Of course, on one occasion, it takes her to the ball, and this is where she loses her iconic shoe. But this Cinderella character has a few other things up her soot-covered sleeve to catch the prince's attention. The Cinderella we see in this film is not a passive wallflower waiting for a prince to save or rescue her.
No. Quite on the contrary, she is very perky, courageous, independent. She could be described as a modern heroine, full of energy and skills and wit.
There are many versions of Cinderella, all of them recognizable as a rags-to-riches story, usually with a lost shoe. The Brothers Grimm are behind one of the most famous variants, and for Claudia Schwaber, there's a special connection.
I was born in Hanau, Germany, the same birthplace as the Brothers Grimm. So I always jokingly say the Brothers Grimm and I, we go way back.
I loved the Grimm stories growing up. They're pretty dark at times, but they were magnificently read to me by my mum. Claudia loved them too, and she discovered that she could research them as a career, pretty good job. And she's now a fairy tale and German professor at Utah State University. Claudia knows many, many takes on this familiar tale. And in the 1973 film version, she finds a notably confident Cinderella. Cinderella and the prince are dancing at the ball. He's struck by her beauty, but her face is partly hidden by a veil. He thinks he doesn't recognize her.
On the first marriage request, she doesn't say yes immediately. She says, I might consider it if you solve a riddle for me.
The prince's mind is working overtime, but Cinderella will only accept his proposal after he's solved the riddle.
She's not the type of sweet Disney princess waiting or the damsel in distress. She is very cheeky and she talks back. For example, she wants to prevent the prince from shooting a deer. So she goes ahead and throws a snowball at him. And she steals the horse. So the fact that she pranks the prince and teases him and challenges him, that gives this particular film a very anti-authoritarian twist.
Maybe it's kind of over-interpretation, but some people would like to see her character as the oppressed one, which finds the power inside of her and does her private revolt against the system, against the oppressive stepmother.
Mikael Bregant is a director of the National Film Archive in Prague. In Czech, the film is called
Tři oříšky pro Popelku. And Popelka, it's a name which was invented for this character because Popel is the ashes connected to the dirty housework from her stepmother. So the name is symbolically humiliating.
The film premiered in Czechoslovakia on November the 16th, 1973. But screenwriter František Pavlicek's name was nowhere to be found in the credits. Instead, he was replaced by a different name.
Bohumila Zelenková, who was also a screenwriter, and she was a friend of František Pavlíček, so she kind of offered that she would cover with her name his work. It was not very safe. It was considered anti-state activity.
Pavlicek had been blacklisted because he was a reformer and public figure during the movement for liberalization in communist Czechoslovakia, which became known as the Prague Spring in 1968 for its blossoming period of greater freedoms.
The intellectuals and the artists tried to change the system in Czechoslovakia and transform into what was the official catchphrase, socialism with human face. And this was the reason why the Soviet Union could not let Czechoslovakia stay on that independent path. They needed to take full control over the country.
In August 1968, Soviet-led forces entered the country.
All reports show that the Czechoslovak people are displaying their defiance of the Russian invaders.
And Pavlicek was amongst those who protested against the invasion.
Czechoslovakia must be free!
In the early 1970s, in the wake of the invasion, the Soviet Union exerted ever more control over Czechoslovakia. Freedom of speech, artistic expression, were severely repressed to maintain ideological control. And the film industry was commandeered by the state.
The cultural landscape of the early 1970s, it was sad, grey, dusty desert.
Producing films for children was easier to get financial support for.
Escapist topics. And a fairy tale is a good thing for an escape from reality.
And so the screenplay, with its true writer hidden, was greenlit for production.
There was nothing political in it at the first sight.
Pavlicek based it on a Cinderella variant written in the mid-19th century in Czechoslovakia, and it was a rather conservative tale. Cinderella meets her prince at a church. But scholar Claudia Schwaber thinks that's not what Pavlicek wanted to show.
It was him who turned the figure of Cinderella into this very spunky, emancipated, self-confident heroine. And that's why she appears very modern when we watch the film these days.
And it wasn't just the radically different Cinderella as a character that made the film captivating. The score is enchanting.
An absolutely vital part is the music. Romantic and beautiful, but not infantilized. The composer, Karel Svoboda, is his name.
Thanks in large part to the funding of their East German partner, the production was able to recruit big names, locations and resources, but it was down to something as mundane as logistics that Three Nuts started to become a festive ritual.
It takes place during wintertime, which makes this particular Cinderella version a unique adaptation. Before that, there was never a movie made with Cinderella riding through a winter wonderland.
The East German production partner on the film had too many projects on in the summer, so production was postponed to the subsequent winter.
And of course, it ties it to the Christmas period right away. So it was a Christmas movie early on. It aired for the first time on German television December 26th. And I think that's what it all started. The ritual of watching Three Nuts for Cinderella has become so ingrained in German culture that many cannot imagine their Christmas celebration without the film. So it has become the ultimate Christmas film in Germany. it's only a Christmas film. You cannot watch it in the summer. It just doesn't go together.
And when Knut Reeson stepped into that recording booth on a summer's day in 1974, he had no idea that he was about to birth a new Christmas tradition in Norway too.
I don't think NRK, not my father, thought that this would have the effect that it had.
The broadcast of Three Nuts for Cinderella becomes a regular fixture of NRK's Christmas Eve programming.
As a young child and a teenager, I was kind of embarrassed. Elderly women look at me in a special way in December. Aren't you the son of that? Yeah, Knut, yeah, yeah. Oh, no Christmas without him.
In 1993, Knut's importance to Christmas became clear when the film didn't appear on people's screens. NRK management thought that viewers would prefer something new, but they were wrong. People took to their phones to complain about missing the old.
Everybody's listening to my dad on Christmas Eve. People say the voice of Christmas. That's Norway for you. Don't change anything about our Christmas Eve.
I feel the same way about The Sound of Music. We watched it together as a family every Christmas. It was one of the few that we all loved together. Every line, every scene, every twist. We were gripped, even though we'd watched it so many times before, because it wasn't really a film by the end. It was more like a ritual, a tradition of family and festive warmth. To be honest, I feel a bit tingly just talking about it. And so does Katrin Miebeck when she talks about this Cinderella film.
I'm probably one of the biggest fans of Three Gifts for Cinderella in Germany. I'm not able to say I'm the biggest fan, but I have a little website on this film. It's now about 20 or 22 years old.
Katrin was just a little girl when she saw the film for the first time on German television.
I was reading a lot of fairy tale books when I was a child, and every princess wore a really big gown with a big skirt. And then I thought, okay, now Cinderella is coming, and you see the dress, it's pink, okay, it's nice, it's glittering. And she enters the ball, and you think, what's that? It's so straight. Where is the skirt? And I was really disappointed when I saw it the first time.
The dress was etched into Katrin's memory. And as she grew up, her love for the film grew too.
There were the nice gowns, of course, the lovely music, the whole setting, and there's no other Libuše Šafránková, the Cinderella actor. I really think it's everything. Everything worked so good together.
So good that Katrin wanted to wear a dress with a straight skirt and a tender ball, just like Cinderella.
I thought, wow, now I am an adult and I can do what I want. I can do a ball if I want to. Let's try this.
Now, every year, 50 guests gather for a ball that she puts on at a youth hostel, which also handily is a small castle.
Everybody's dressed up. There are random princes and princesses, and sometimes there's an owl or a dove. Once, yeah, somebody came with his grandmother's curtains around his neck and the Burger King crown. Great.
There's a film quiz, and then everyone settles down to the main event.
And when the film is over, everybody says, ah, because it's so nice. Ah, Cinderella found her prince. They're riding over the horizon. Ah.
Then tables are pushed to the side to make space for a dance.
We have several dances my husband and I came up with. We have the couples in a long row and we jump back and forth in face of each other. It's not a serious reenactment what we are doing there. It's not about doing the steps absolutely right. It's just about being together. I'm just having fun.
The story of the emancipated Cinderella holds a special place for Katrin. But it has a wider importance too. It subverts the traditional fairy tale genre. Cinderella's fortune at the end was not based on a miracle. She deserved her fortune because she had worked for it. But audiences across Germany and Czechoslovakia in the 1970s also enjoyed the movie for what it was, a fairy tale.
Fairy tales give you a sense of hope And optimism, especially the ones that have a happily ever after, they contain communal values and moral messages, and they also deal with issues of justice. They're very important cultural artifacts.
And Michal Bregant from the National Film Archive in Prague reminds us of just how significant this film is. It's a cultural artifact created in 1970s Czechoslovakia.
We can enjoy the movie, but it didn't fall from heavens. I don't want to put the iron curtain between Cinderella and the prince, but myself, I have very ambiguous relationship to the film because I cannot see the film outside the context of involuntarily made agreement between the government and the people. We are going to offer you some fun on television, but you are going to stay loyal. And I hate that with the bottom of my heart. I cannot watch it without some sort of political or historical filter. It's not just a fairy tale. It has a very dramatic context outside of the movie.
But Michal agrees with Claudia that there's no denying this particular fairy tale was special.
You could not really trust whatever you could see on the screen. It was just this propaganda type of approach. Unlike here, this humanistic message, convincing performance, strong character. It was such a relief to see something real on the screen.
This film traveled from Czechoslovakia in the 1970s to households across Europe. And to this day, it remains a Christmas tradition to sit down with family to watch it.
I think it goes back to nostalgia a lot. It's something that we relive again and again every time we watch it. Even in my own family, I like to show it to my little girls. And this is how this entire experience watching the film becomes a self-perpetuating Christmas ritual that brings the family together in front of the television, and then a tradition.
Every December, when the film is broadcast on TV in Germany, superfan Katrin Miebeck snuggles up to take part in the tradition.
I'm making a hot drink, hazelnut cookies, 3 hazelnuts on each cookie, of course. And I'm gathering my son, he's a big fan too. And then we cuddle on the sofa. And I know now the next 82 minutes, I will be happy. Of course I have seen it 200 times, but that doesn't matter. There are thousands of people having the same feelings, watching it now with me. In Germany, in the Czech Republic, in Norway, in Switzerland, I think in Austria too.
And in Slovakia, Poland, Georgia, Ukraine. Watching the film is an idealization of what Christmas should be. It's romantic, beautiful, magical. And so is the fact, I think, that households all across Europe gather their loved ones to watch one of Europe's biggest Christmas films and share the tradition.
That is something that is so worthy and that's so important that I am a very little small part of this community who is sharing such a joy and love to the film. That's a great feeling.
But they're missing out on the great voice. I don't really want to sink the boat here, but it's not a good movie.
Olaf Riesson may not think the film is that great, but he'll still put it on every year. And he's learned his lesson from that stressful morning when his kids were waiting to watch it. He now owns an emergency DVD just in case the TV is shut down by heavy snow. And just after Cinderella and the Prince ride off together into a winter wonderland, Olaf and his family put flowers on Knut's grave. For Olaf, 3 nuts for Cinderella is more than an event, more even than tradition. It's about spending Christmas with Dad.
I don't think there is one day going by that I don't think about, and especially in Christmas. I was more proud than I let people know. I'm getting emotional. I'm so damn proud because for 55 years I had my very best friend in my dad, and I don't. Yeah, so it's pride,
and it's pride, and it's the stars in my daughter's eyes when they hear the voice. So, yoo-hoo! For us, it's a voice that we all miss.
And almost 50 years after Knut stepped into the recording booth, Olaf was asked to take part in a Norwegian remake of the film in 2021, featuring singer Astrid S as Cinderella. He was asked to dub one of her biggest songs, Think Before I Talk, to promote the film.
You can't change the real thing, because it's a tradition. And there's nothing more important to Norwegian than Christmas traditions.
Three Nuts for Cinderella is still a core part of Norway's Christmas celebrations. And I hope, perhaps like Olaf, that it always will be. In 2015, the Czech Republic and Norway even collaborated on digitally restoring the film. Norway insisted on keeping Knut's voiceover, so I don't think Olaf has anything to worry about. In a much smaller way, I kind of know how he feels. When I watch The Sound of Music with my own kids each Christmas, and it's sometimes a bit of a struggle at the beginning to get them to pay attention, then they get into it, and I can see in their attentive eyes and their immersement that they're part of this magical family tradition. And it takes my mind to my dad and my mum, who looked into the eyes of me when I was growing up, with a sense of hope collectively inspired by the film. The joy of the Christmas film, I think, can be the reassurance and comfort that comes with knowing that some things remain the same in a very fast-changing world. Whether it's bringing family members together in front of the TV, or fostering a broader cultural heritage between different sides of Europe, the power of that tradition lies in our collective capacity to share, to let go, and to marinate in a kind of magic. Thanks to the producer of this episode, Amalia Sortland. The series editor is Catherine Godfrey. Mix and sound design by Naomi Clark. And our theme tune is by Ioana Shilaru. Sideways is produced by Novel for BBC Radio 4. And we will return in 2024 with more episodes.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Wark, and this is The Reunion. Reflecting on a shared news event, a cultural moment, or just the experience of all being there at the same time and the same place.
I just started doing that voice to Armando.
When he was stressed?
Nervous breakdown, nervous.
And we all started chanting.
It just became this mean thing.
Now all 200 editions of the Radio 4 programme are available on BBC Sounds. From the makers of Chariots of Fire to the Beirut hostages.
I do remember asking one of the guards, Brian's Irish, they've done nobody any harm, and there was a long pause, and he said, Brian was a mistake.
From the Brighton bomb to Olympic heroes.
From when you're running a world record in Oslo with Seb Coe chasing me on the last lap, or whether you're doing it in the Durham Schools Champs, the process is the same, it's just the context is very different.
You can hear again all 200 editions of The Reunion. Search for The Reunion on BBC Sounds.